This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, and we are underway for the second half of the show. David Poile joins us, GM of the Preds, 15 minutes from now. Looking forward to that. Alongside Paul Kuharski in Brentwood, I'm Jonathan Hunt in Murfreesboro. No Chad Withrow today. He's out on furlough. The crew, all of us, will be together next week. David Reed is the chairman of the board. He's got Midday 180 gear on. He's never looked better. He has the red, white, and blue, the bandana on the head.
So handsome.
The grizzly beard and the Midday 180 t-shirt. Midday mixer tonight. We have two spots available, Paul. And now we put out the call to say, if you want to join us for the Midday Mixer presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, 8 p.m. tonight, 8 to 10 p.m., an off-the-record chat. We're going a lot of different directions, a very laid-back discussion with you, and it's all presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, great partners with us where we also go for our fantasy football draft and much more. They're the home of the original Tennessee whiskey, as well as Bellmead bourbon and many other fine spirits made with loving care right here in Nashville. Brothers Andy and Charlie Nelson revived the distillery founded by their great-great-great-grandfather in 1860, and you can enjoy Bellmead bourbon and everything from Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, including Tennessee whiskey, by visiting their location right here in Marathon Village.
It's a good time every time. We look forward to meeting you, hanging with you, and last couple people be wise to jump in now. So come on, bring
DM
it.
DM us, and we'll send
slide
you
up on in. Slide up on in there. We're inviting you. A lot of times when people slide up in somebody's DMs,
yeah,
it's unwelcome. that's the truth, right? Oh God, somebody's sliding up in my DMs. How many times have I said that to you guys off air?
All the time.
These ladies just sliding up in my DMs and I'm accounted for, and you know, it's just not my thing.
Or it's Ryan Mudd sliding up in DMs of ladies on Twitter.
Hey, I want to be your life coach and more. but here we're inviting it. We're welcoming it. We're asking for it. So bring it, and then we'll have a big night. I can taste the cocktail right now.
At Midday 180 on Twitter. You can also message us on Facebook or Instagram at Midday 180. Let us know you'd like in the mixer tonight, 8 p.m. We're going to pack up that room, and we've got this week and next week for our Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery Midday Mixer. Candace Story Lee, no more interim tag for her at Vanderbilt. She is the official athletic director for Vanderbilt Athletics. Congratulations to her getting that position. And we were discussing earlier that it's hard to win as the AD of Vandy because of the lack of support from above the athletic program.
Yes, and that's an important point to be made here. It's about the priorities of the chancellor and the board of trust. They've got to buy into athletics being a more important part of the entire university and not just something that's compartmentalized and over there. Nothing anyone in the athletic director role can do until that attitude changes. And so that's not about her. She's a prisoner in that regard, but we want more. And, you know, she can't push against that if there's no room to push against that, but hopefully there's a change. I have no reason to expect that the chancellor, a new chancellor and a board of trust are going to have changed thinking.
Paul, how much was the stadium out in L.A.? How much is it estimated to cost right now in these reports?
$6 billion? I don't know.
Originally, Coach Mack and Jeff Fisher and everyone, they were out in L.A. whenever all of this was being planned. And originally, it was going to cost $2.2 billion. Ton of money.
Which is the going price. But,
right. So
that's what Vegas cost, I think, 2.1.
Right. And a couple of points with all this. The builders that are taking care of that stadium are the same builders that built the stadium in Minnesota. And the anchors of this stadium, these huge, massive, the base of the stadium that go into the ground, went down in Minnesota 45 feet deep. In LA, I guess because of earthquakes and other things, they go down 90 feet. So you double that. And then after they did that, they dug this out. They had what Mac described as biblical rains out there for a year, and it delayed and pushed back everything. And when you delay that process, costs go up. And beyond that, they've hit the coronavirus. They've have other structure things that they have to consider, and it's changed the cost and reevaluate it. But yeah, I mean, the cost overrun coupled with the fact that they can't sell, and some would argue they missed their window of when to open up the stadium because the team went to the Super Bowl during all this time while they were under construction, and now they're so salary cap stricken that they're not going to run it back, so to speak. Beyond that, though, here's the silver lining for another team in that stadium, the Chargers. They have no skin in the game with that stadium. It is all on Kroenke. It's all on the Rams. They are just renting. They're just borrowing the stadium for their home games. So they're sitting back, looking pretty, and the Rams are on the hook for all of it.
They still need to get people in there. And yeah, so it's a silver lining in one regard. In the other regard, once it's all over, you know, they're really kind of just a tenant. And in terms of establishing their own identity, you know, that they've got the better uniforms. You can say that.
Yeah.
Lebowski says, who's building this thing? The Department of Defense? Halliburton? With this size of cost overruns, it really is just amazing.
All the rain, which you're not predicting out there, all the rain made practically a lake for several months that they just couldn't pump out because they dug down so deep that you couldn't keep the water out of it.
Yeah. I remember walking by, they're very obvious where those anchors are in Arlington, right? Those huge chain links that are going into the ground, right? And it's kind of a feature outside there where you walk by, you can almost pose with it like it's a piece of art or a sculpture, just because of how massive it is where it's anchored into the ground.
Coming up, Predators general manager David Poile will join us. We'll get the latest update on what he's heard about the possible return to play for NHL players and for the Nashville Predators. David Poile next. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Barbecue today with Paul Koharski and Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. Chad Withrow out this week. Back with us next week. David Reed is the chairman of the board for us. Pleased to be joined by Predators general manager David Poile. David, hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well and somewhat feeling optimistic that things are getting better in the world in terms of possible health and safety, and that possibly we might be getting a little bit more direction from the NHL or the NHLPA in terms of a possible startup time here.
I realize info may be limited, but can you give us the latest update on what you have heard about the possible return from your calls and chats, both formal or informal, as the league makes sure that this season is played and the cup is skated?
Yeah. We had a call on Monday, basically NHL owners with Gary Bettman, and it was a little disappointing because I think we all felt that maybe that was a time we were going to get what I would call more of like a critical date calendar. But I guess what's happening is the NHL and the NHLPA are trying to agree on what the format would look like when we come back to play. And once you get that, then all these dates can all fall in order. So the best that I know right now is I would say approximately the first week of June, if health and safety continues in the right direction and we're able to be allowed facilities to be opened up, probably on a limited basis for, you know, a few players at a time. And so you probably need, you know, three or four sessions in a day to have players come in and out of working out and get on the ice, that type of thing. And that would be leading up to a training camp period, which feels like it's going to take about a month more to dot the I's and cross the T's and get all your players back. We, for example, have a number of players over in Europe, and how do they get back? When they come back, will there be like a 14-day quarantine period? All of those questions aren't answered right now, but assuming that the NHL and the PA can agree on a format to come back, I think things are starting to get into motion to at least get our players into our facilities as soon as maybe the first week of June.
What have you been told, or what have you heard about the potential expanded playoff model that would feature Paul and I were discussing yesterday, the 2014 model? I know players, including Matt Duchene, prefer to see the NHL with a normal best of seven playoff. I think we all wish we could see that, but no matter what schedule is decided upon, there's going to be some sacrifices made. I'm curious where you would lean on the model that was floated out yesterday about that 2014 playoff.
The model that was floated out there yesterday, I think, is fine. When I say that, believe me, that everybody's a great team player in all these concepts until it's about them and their team. And again, you're not going to please everybody. So starting off with, you're dropping seven teams to get to 24. There's people that think that maybe that number shouldn't be 24. It should be closer to 20, or maybe, as Matt Duchene says, to 16. But regardless, my position would be that I think we'd be fortunate, and I'd be very happy if we get back to play, to compete, have a chance to officially make the playoffs, to compete for the Stanley Cup. So that's where I'm at. I think it's complicated in that what's at stake here is we're going to start with 24 teams, so you're going to play, for all intents and purposes, it feels like some kind of a playoff round to get into the playoffs. And one of the considerations goes back to your draft position for the entry draft, which hasn't been decided yet. So if I was to win and say we did this and we were to win in this playoff round in the playoffs, I would be very easy to accept that we will not have a lottery pick. We'll be in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. But we could get upset, like other teams could get upset in this playoff round, and that team right now has a lower pick than we do in the entry draft, and they would get into the playoffs. So there's a bunch of nuances that probably have to be still negotiated and straightened out. But like I said, on the surface, the format seems to be pretty fair to me.
Is the geographical setup of that you would be at a location with several other teams? But even if Nashville was selected as one of those locations, you couldn't be here.
Well, I don't know about that. What I've been told or heard the most is that two or four locations. And I think for safety purposes, they're probably thinking the fewer, the better. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have 12 teams at one site and 12 teams at another site. As far as if we were able to, if Nashville was ever successful in being one of the sites, I think we could be here. I don't know how they would decide, what conference was here or what conference was at with the other location that they decided. So I don't think that would necessarily be a factor. So again, it'd be really a different situation. You just imagine, we all be in the same city and probably in the same hotel, and it'd be really a totally different situation. And of course, without fans, I mean, we got a lot of things that we have to find out about. What can your roster be? We need an expanded roster here, because of the potential of injuries, et cetera, et cetera. Who can you take in your staff, from your management to your scouts, to doctors, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of things that we need to find out about.
Curious too, Matt Duchene was on 3HL and said that, he thinks players need about 5 weeks to get the legs back ready to play, and that quality of player injuries, different things could be or should be under consideration. And I think that the point of emphasis that needs to be made is this is a lot different than the other leagues, because you're having to handle conditioning over this last 2.5 months, where a football player can go out and run and work out and do cardio, but there is no replacement for skating on ice, even in the off season. And unless those players who left the country to go skate on a sheet of ice, they don't have many options. How many of your players are actually around a sheet of ice right now that you know of?
Not very many. I think there's a few in Sweden. Their rules seem to be relaxed a little bit. I've got a couple guys in Canada that I understand have some access to skating. But as of today, we got 15 players that are in Nashville, and to my knowledge, none of them have skated. So, you know, right away, you have sort of an unlevel playing field, depending on where your players have been. And that's why, again, I think just using these dates, that please don't hold me to any of these dates, but just opening facilities and starting in June and having a longer runway to maybe an official training camp near the end of June, I think that will give everybody ample time to get in good shape. And as you said, the big thing that separates us from all other sports is the skating and the need to have that part of your conditioning for your legs, for your groins, and to hopefully keep the injuries in that area as low as possible before we actually get back to playing at a high level.
Seems like there's no concern, David, for how long or how far this might go and when it might end. Is that fair? And do you not care? That seems fine. I guess it could cause an issue when it comes to the length of the off season on the other side, but you'll worry about that when you get to that.
I think in a nutshell, Paul, that's accurate. I mean, to me, again, I'm just trying to, you know, without having this critical date calendar, we get started in, mid-July, something like that. Like, I don't think we'll have a 5-week training camp. We'll have a 2 or 3 week training camp, especially if the facilities are open for that month long. I mean, you probably could get this done and, you know, present the Stanley Cup, I think, sometime in early September. By my calculation, I could be wrong in that. Yes, you're right. I mean, we'd have to have a shorter, you know, off season, which would make perfect sense. Maybe 6 weeks, 2 months, absolutely at the most, so that we could get back in business. I'd say by December at the very, very latest, so we could play catch up and have the season over next year by the end of June. You know, so to get back on a what we call a regular, normal schedule again. So it's all doable. I don't think we're under any time or date constraints right now. I think right now it all feels like it's workable. I just got to knock on wood when I say that, because it's all about health and safety. It has to be good before anything is going to work.
David Poile, our guest. Joe Rexroad had a feature with Ryan Johansson that gave some insight into why things were frustrating at times for him and why he says he wasn't playing well. If you think about your roster, David, and some of the players who were struggling either from a mental or physical standpoint, whatever it might be, who are guys that you think could actually benefit from an extended layoff and then pick back up and come in rejuvenated, so to speak?
Well, as I said before, there is such a thing as a silver lining in all of this. I think it's for our coaching staff and for some of our players. With the coaching change midway through the season, I think John Hines has had no time to sit down and develop, you know, relationships with the players or with the staff. It's just, you know, we're playing every other night or back-to-back games. And during this this pause, if you will, I mean, he's had a lot of time to spend with his coaches and also with our players, since we have 15 players in Nashville, and he's met with every one of them. And I think from that standpoint, he getting to know them and talking about their year, their role, their expectations, our expectations, I would be very curious to see how we come back to play as a team, and specifically a lot of individuals. There's no question in my mind it's been an up and down season because of the inconsistency of some of our players, and specifically, you know, our top end forwards, the guys that are our highest paid players, the guys that are there to create our offense, are all having down years. I've never been part of a team where your top five forwards actually have having off years if you're just measuring things simply by statistics. And, you know, that's something that certainly could and should be better, and could, and I'm hopefully expecting, will change when we get back to play here in this new format. And I'm looking for better things from individual players like a Ryan Johansson, who I read the article by Joe there, and, you know, I think Ryan owned it, if you will, in terms of how he was playing and what his own expectations are for himself. So, you know, words are one thing, and obviously actions are another. So let's see what happens. Let's give us that chance to get back and play and see if there's a little bit of difference in our team, and specifically some of the individual performances on our team.
David Poile with us. A month or so ago when you joined us, I recall you telling us that you were almost busier now than you were before the pause in play because of all the meetings that were taking place. When is the next meeting or the next call with all the GMs, with the league office, with Bettman, or do you know at this time?
Yeah, I know. Right now it's I think they're down to this small group of just talking to this return to play committee, and I think if they get what we're reading about this format agreed upon the next day or so, that you're going to see what I'm referring to again as this critical date calendar. I mean, at least that's what my expectations are. And when you get that, then I think from players to management to coaches, we'll all have a purpose and a direction in terms of what we can do on a daily basis. So, and once that happens, you know, things will really get ramped up. I mean, you can just imagine the protocols that we'll have to go through when we open our facility at Bridgetown Arena for whether it be specifically for, you know, players or your training staff and who's allowed to be here or there, all the sanitization processes. And then I would hope and think that eventually we'd open up our offices as other offices are opening here in Nashville. So as we get back to normal, there's going to be a lot of details that need to be ironed out to make this all work successfully.
I know there are people in the organization better equipped to answer this, David, but you're the Predators executive we're talking to. Can you give us a sense of the financial health of the organization from your vantage point?
Yeah, that's obviously we've all taken a big hit for sure. Let me talk about it in the whole league standpoint. I think it's probably easier. I mean, basically, there's $1.1 billion that's been left on the table from not being able to play the remainder of the season and the playoffs. So that's obviously revenue that's for people that buy tickets and concessions. And, of course, there's the money that you have for your sponsors and your TV revenues, et cetera, et cetera. In the NHL, in our collective bargaining agreement, we share with the players. We have a 50-50 arrangement. So when I say that everybody wants to come back and play, I mean it. And I mean it by that is that there's a lot of money at stake. I'm certainly realizing, as the owners do and the players do, that we're not going to recapture all the money coming back in whatever format we come back, but we certainly should capture a lot of these dollars. That's going to go a long way to making each of our franchise, including Nashville, you know, in a healthier situation than we would be if we didn't play this season. But overall, I mean, to give it a shorter answer, I think as long as we, you know, resume play, I think our franchise is in good shape. I mean, our business side has done an outstanding job. Our sponsors are very loyal to us. Our fans have been very loyal to us. And getting back to play solves a lot of problems that may present itself if we don't play at all.
David Poile has been our guest. We always enjoy these chats, David. Thank you for the update, because us, like you, we're hoping that you're able to get back on the ice very soon, and we'll chat soon, hopefully.
Thank you, guys. Hopefully next time we talk, we'll be talking about specific dates and opponents and things like that. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks. You got it. Thank you for the insight.
He wants that calendar.
Yep. David Poile, always great. He's been our guest, and shed some insight there on how they're still waiting. But based on the answer, Paul, and we can discuss this on the other side, that 24-team playoff sounds like that's the direction they're going. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Edley's Barbecue is excited to announce they're planning to open their East Nashville location on Monday, June 1st. It's been tough to get through tornado damage and the pandemic, but they're getting back into the swing of things at their East Nashville location very soon. Edley's is actively hiring for this location as well as their other spots. If you're interested in joining the Edley's Barbecue family, Will and Catherine, the owners, awesome. Visit edleysbbq.com/jobs or visit their Sylvan Park location this week to apply in person. by Edley's Barbecue. We always enjoy our chats with David Poile. We always come away learning something about the process of that job that he's in. And also, it's always a great opinion on directions the league may be headed in. And in this one, we learn, guys, about the process of just trying to get a calendar going and resume play. And based on that last answer, Paul, they're going to return to play. There is no option of just we're going to unpause all of this and call it the 2020-2021 season. They're going to finish this one.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody's intent on that, and that the calendar or the lateness of the finish doesn't really matter. Now, there's always the potential that something goes badly once they do restart, and then things go off the rails. Certainly, we're hoping that that doesn't happen. I'm very curious about the Predators' finances, and we need to do some digging on that. He spelled it out in broad terms there, league-wise. But how many franchises in Major League Sports don't have billionaire owners these days? I don't think it's too many. And the Preds are one, right? And so how much pain can you absorb? You know, I think that that's an interesting question to delve into. And, you know, hate to think of them absorbing it in that way, but there's a lot to absorb right now. And like he said, you know, they can be made more whole, but not all the way whole,
right?
Once things resume. And that's a blow to a team that's operating, whose operation is a different deal than, you know, the Rangers or the Maple Leafs or several others.
I'm intrigued by that as well. I mean, just the fact that you hear that, I'll give the Sounds as another example. We hear that the Preds and the Sounds have not furloughed or laid off anyone. I mean, when you think about that, that is remarkable for buildings and stadiums that have sat empty, right? And that, especially in the NHL, but minor league baseball, I think everyone would understand that they're coming up with every gimmick possible to get butts in seats. But in the NHL, when you look at the TV contract compared to what you make at the gate, that gate is far more significant to the NHL than it is, for instance, the NFL, where they're distributing millions upon millions of dollars per team based on their contracts with Fox, CBS, NBC, and ESPN.
And to Paul's point, though, the situation here in Nashville is so specific to Nashville. There's so much money generated by Bridgestone Arena through the concerts and other events that are being held there that are no longer there at all. So, I mean, we're not talking about a Thompson in Winnipeg or a Kroenke in Colorado. Mm-hmm. We're talking about an ownership group that collectively is nowhere near the upper half of this league when it comes to the wealth of the owners. And then when you take away that other revenue stream that that organization is relying on, the fact that they haven't to this point had to let anyone go, it's beyond remarkable.
Yeah, I don't know how they're doing it. I sent out a tweet last night, kind of talking now more broadly about the city, of my hat show poster from the Rolling Stones show, which at the time was at LP Field. It doesn't have the year on it, by the way. It says June 17th, special guest Brad Paisley. I'm a guy that likes big things out on my calendar. I'm feeling particularly restless today. And I think it's because last night was going to be the Rolling Stones at Nissan Stadium. And I love looking forward to stuff. I love looking forward to vacations. I love looking forward to big concerts. I love looking forward to big games, trips, everything. And last night was one of those nights, as Simon watched the over-under probably is 10 movies to celebrate the end of his grueling school year, the last quarter of which included zero trips to school and roughly 2 hours a day of schoolwork. But I had that restlessness, and now this Predators conversation kind of makes me feel that too, as we're talking about that building being so dead and so empty for so long. It's just that Nashville's not Nashville. And it hits me in different waves, but certainly last night was one of them, because a Rolling Stones concert in Nashville, it's a giant deal. A Rolling Stones concert anywhere is a giant deal. But when that thing comes to your backyard, it's big. And last night was one of those nights where the void was big, and that communal feeling, that's a lot of fun to be a part of. There was no hope of it.
I've wondered throughout this whole process, watching the economy of Nashville just come to a screeching halt. And there's something inherent about this city that just leans itself towards the music and tourism trade. But are we leaning way too much on that to be the lifeblood of this city?
That's a great question.
Because this shows us very quickly how all of that can just go away. I think moving forward, Nashville has to really look itself in the mirror and say, what other dimension as an economy do we need to go out there and pursue to make sure that the next time this happens, that there aren't millions of people filing for unemployment because they can't work in the tourism trade in Nashville anymore?
Well, publishing's big, right? And we don't really publish the way we used to because everything's online. Healthcare's big, so that's a good thing to be in during a pandemic, I suppose.
Well, no, because we're not allowing people to go to the doctors or to the hospitals. So they're furloughing people. They're laying people off.
Yeah. And I was reading the Tennessean report, and this is me reading it last week or 2 weeks ago and then trying to recall the exact number. It's over $300 million is what the estimate was in tourism loss for the city. Because there were upwards of 50 to 60 trade shows or business events or convention center rentals or you name it that was scheduled to be in downtown Nashville during this part of the calendar that's no longer there. And moving forward, things were canceled well on the books.
I think you raise a great point there, David, but off the top of my head, too, I'm trying to think of what other cities are known for and how it's affecting them. And I'm thinking, Wall Street's affected by this. Well, beaches are affected by, well, that's tourism too. But like rattle off some other industries. There are very few that aren't struck in a similar fashion.
The one that comes to mind, obviously, is Amazon, who is just counting stacks during this whole thing. Has the tech industry in California and in Silicon Valley, have they really taken a big hit throughout the course of this? I mean, Nashville really, to me, just stands out as a one-note town, pun intended.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. How do we, and that's a question for city government, like what's the next big thing you bring? You ought to maybe consider making sure it's not a tourism music centered thing and that you diversify. So the next crisis isn't, if it hits tourism, you're not hit the same way. I think that's some smart thinking.
Coming up, David Reed with a memory of a comment about a trampoline. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. I was scrolling through trying to get Paul's advice yesterday on Facebook, where my primary complaint was Facebook doesn't let me see things in order. And it's buried deep into the bowels of Facebook.
But there is a way. I know how to do it.
There is an option. But then I click that option and I have a blank screen. I have the Facebook heading in a blank screen because it says no updates to load, which is bizarre. But anyway, I went back to the old format and I saw a post from David Reed, and it was a story about a trampoline and a comment that he overheard a woman. Was it a woman?
No, this was a guy. It was a guy.
Oh, a guy.
Yeah.
So this was this memorable moment.
So this was back 3 years ago. Now, Chris Cornell had just died, and this is verbatim the exact way that I overheard this in the aisle at the Academy Sports in Mount Julian. Man, when I heard Chris Cornell died, I was like, that's it. Life is too short. I'm buying a trampoline. I don't care what anyone else thinks.
He was there to shop for a trampoline because Cornell passed away.
I didn't know trampolines were such a hot topic for people. I didn't know they were that divisive.
And think how Chris Cornell looked down on that and thought how he touched people. He thought through that voice that he would change people. But little did he know that he was pulling off a big commission for somebody at Academy Sports for a trampoline.
When I reposted that the other day, it did dawn on me that the fact that this guy was in Mount Juliet with the storms, there's not a chance that that trampoline is still
not
at his residence.
Simon has told his mother that I agreed to an in-ground trampoline, which I don't recall at all. He made the case to me, and I said, as long as we could convince your mother, that sounds cool, which I don't recall saying at all. But he doesn't lie. But I said something like, yeah, who's digging the hole on that? And he's like, yeah, we'll have somebody with the machine come and do it. And then I would have said, like, well, what about the puddling? I mean, there's a commercial on right now that shows an in-ground trampoline in somebody's backyard. I think it's an insurance commercial. It looks cool as hell. But I also think catching yourself on the edge of that bad boy would be the end of a lot of athletic careers and maybe the end of a lot of walking for a lot of
people. Growing up, we had the trampoline and we loved it. But, now living with Claire's in insurance. The thought of a trampoline.
Single most dangerous thing there is. Right?
She trembles at the thought of a trampoline, someone grabbing one and putting that on their insurance because it skyrockets based on you having a trampoline at home.
Yeah. I'm content with Simon getting on his buddy's trampolines when he's at their houses.
That's the evolution of today's age. And I sound so old saying that, but we would do, we have a dunk contest off the trampoline at home. Friends would come over and do that. And, we'd get a scrape or a skin knee every now and then, but that was it. But at the time, you don't think about it. You're just having a blast.
Yeah, summertime.
And you're outside.
Summertime in Spring Hill, we were pulling the Cornwall's trampoline up next to their above-ground pool, and that's how the days were spent. Until one day, they were tragically lost a spring, and then that was pretty much the end of that.
How are the Cornwall's doing?
They're doing great. They're doing great. It seems like every time that I go past there to go see my mom, they're all over there again. So they're same house as they've always lived. Well, not that they've always lived in, but they lived in while I was growing up. So they're doing good. Got a concrete company down there. So if you ever need some concrete done, Dusty's and Sons Concrete, they'll take care of you.
Is the above ground pool then?
It has since been taken down. There were at one time batting cages that it took taken their place, and now they have a garden and they're keeping bees in that same area.
A backyard batting cage.
Bee keeper.
I would kill for a backyard batting cage.
Would Simon rather have the batting cage or the trampoline?
Oh, a trampoline. 100%. A skate park. I think right now it'd be skate park 1, trampoline 1B, batting cage 15.
I'm anxious to see how long this skating phase with Simon lasts.
Well, I'll say this: he's been talking about it a lot, but he hasn't been back out.
There's a version of a skateboard I want you to look at, Paul, because I saw it as an Instagram ad, and it's a skateboard that has a small tire in the middle of it that you balance on, and that's instead of having the four wheels, you have this.
It's a fifth wheel?
You don't have, I don't think it's a fifth wheel. I think it's just a centered tire. And it's formed in a way where that's all you need. I don't know. I'll send it to you, but real quick, let me, I
save
the
name of it.
Helps you
work on your balance and stuff?
Yeah, but it you do tricks with it, just like you would a skateboard. It's called One Wheel. That's the name of the product.
That's a terrible name. I mean, it's very self-explanatory and utilitarian, but it's a terrible name.
What is this? Oh, that's One Wheel.
Speaking of working on your balance, scooters are back in Nashville. Music City's open for business, baby.
Were they ever gone?
Yes, they were taken off the streets. Yep.
Babies are back on the backs of husbands.
They're on the shoulders
of men riding our city. We know we're back in business.
If only that dude had a beer in his hand. That's the only thing that could have made that video better.
Beer in the hand because it was empty. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.